page 231. The Thunder Caves, pages 231 to 250. Page 232 is blank. Page 233. Before the first pink streaks of dawn lighted the sky, Bulowith and his warriors, myself among them, rode out from the kingdom of Hrothgar and followed the cliff edge above the sea. On this day I did not feel fit, for my head ached. Also was my stomach sour from the celebration of the previous night. Surely all the warriors of Bulowith were in like condition, yet no man gave signal of these discomforts. We rode briskly, skirting the border of the cliffs, which on all this coast are high and forbidding and sheer. In a sheet of gray stone they drop to the foaming and turbulent sea below. In some places along this coastline there are rocky beaches, but often the land and the sea meet directly, and the waves crash like thunder upon the rocks, and this was the circumstance for the most part. I saw Hergr, who carried upon his horse the sealskin ropes of the dwarves, and I rode up to travel alongside him. Page 234. I inquired what was our purpose on this day. In truth, I did not care greatly, so badly did my headache and my stomach burn. Hergr said to me, "On this morning we attack the mother of the Wendel in the Thunder Caves. This we shall do by attacking from the sea, as I have told you yesterday." While I rode, I looked from my horse down at the sea, which smashed upon the rock cliffs. "Do we attack by boat?" I inquired of Hergr. "No," Hergr said, and slapped his hand upon the sealskin ropes. Then I took his meaning to be that we should climb down the cliffs on the ropes, and thereby in some fashion make an entrance into the caves. I was much frightened at this prospect, for never have I liked to be exposed upon high places. Even high buildings in the City of Peace have I avoided. I said as much. Hergr said to me, "Be thankful, for you are fortunate." I inquired the source of my fortune. Hergr said in reply, "If you have the fear of high places, then this day you shall overcome it, and so you shall have faced a great challenge, and so you shall be adjudged a hero." Page 235. I said to him, "I do not want to be a hero." At this he laughed and said that I expressed such an opinion only because I was an Arab. Then also he said that I had a stiff head, by which the Northmen mean the aftermath of drinking. This was true, as I have already told. Also, it is true that I was much aggrieved at the prospect of climbing down the cliff. Verily, I felt in this manner, that I should rather do any action upon the face of the earth, whether to lie with a woman in menses, to drink from a gold cup, to eat the excrement of a pig, to put out my eyes, even to die itself. Any or all of these things should I prefer to the climbing of that accursed cliff. Also, I was in ill temper. To Hergr, I said, "You and Bulowith and all your company may be heroes as suits your temper, but I have no part in this affair and shall not number as one of you." At this speech, Hergr laughed. Then he called to Bulowith and spoke a rapid speech. Bulowith answered him back over his shoulder. Then Hergr spoke to me, "Bulowith says that you will do as we do." In truth, now I sank into despairing and said to Hergr, "I cannot do this thing. If you force me to do it, I shall surely die." Hergr said, "How shall you die?" Page 236. I said to him, "I shall lose my grip from the ropes." This answer made Hergr laugh heartily yet again, and he repeated my words to all the Northmen, and they all laughed at what I had said. Then Bulowith spoke a few words. Hergr said to me, "Bulowith says that you shall lose your grip only if you release the ropes from your hands, and only a fool would do such a thing. Bulowith says you are an Arab, but no fool." Now, here is a true aspect of the nature of men, that in his fashion Bulowith said that I could climb the ropes, and that for his speech I believed it as much as he, and was cheered in my heart to a slight degree. This Hergr saw, and he spoke these words, "Each person bears a fear which is special to him. One man fears a close space, and another man fears drowning. Each laughs at the other and calls him stupid. Thus, fear is only a preference, to be counted the same as the preference for one woman or another, or mutton for pig, or cabbage for onion. We say, fear is fear. I was not in a mood for his philosophies. This I expressed to him, for in truth I was growing closer to anger than to fear. Now Herger laughed at my face and spoke these words, "Praise Allah, for he put death at the end of life and not at the beginning." Page 237. Curtly, I said in reply that I saw no benefit in hastening the end. "Indeed, no man does," Herger responded to me, and then he said, "Look to Bulwif. See how he sits straight? See how he rides forward, though he knows he shall soon die." I answered, "I do not know he shall die." "Yes," Herger said, "but Bulwif knows." Then Herger spoke nothing further to me, and we rode onward for a goodly period of time, until the sun was high and bright in the sky. Then at last Bulwif gave the signal to halt, and all the horsemen dismounted and prepared to enter the Thunder Caves. Now, well I know that these Northmen are brave to a fault, but as I looked at the precipice of the cliff below us, my heart twisted over inside my chest, and I thought I should be purging myself at any instant. Verily, the cliff was absolutely sheer, lacking the least grip for hand or feet, and it descended for the distance of perhaps 400 paces. Verily, the crashing waves were so far beneath us that they appeared as miniature waves, tiny as the most delicate drawing of an artist. Yet I knew them to be large as any waves on earth, once one descended to that level far below. Page 238. To me, the climbing down of these cliffs was madness beyond the madness of a foaming dog, but the Northmen proceeded in normal fashion. Bulwif directed the pounding of stout wooden sticks into the earth. Around these, the sealskin ropes were bound, and the trailing ends flung over the sides of the cliffs. Verily, the ropes were not long enough for so distant a descent, and thus had to be hauled up again and two ropes fastened together to make a single length to reach the waves at the bottom. In due time, we had two such ropes that reached down the side of the cliff face. Then Bulwif spoke to his gathering, "First I shall proceed, so that when I reach the bottom all shall know that the ropes are stout and the journey can be accomplished. I await you at the bottom on the narrow ledge you see below." I looked to this narrow ledge. To call it narrow is to call a camel kind. It was, in truth, the barest strip of flat rock, continually washed and pounded by the surf. When all have reached the bottom, Bulwif said, "we can attack the mother of the Wendel in the Thunder Caves." Page 239. Thus he spoke, in a voice as ordinary as that which he would command a slave in the preparation of some ordinary stew or any other household chore. And, without further speech, he went over the side of the cliff. Now, here is the manner of his descent, which I found remarkable, but the Northmen accounted no particular thing. Herger told me they used this method for gathering of seabird eggs at certain times of the year, when the seabirds build their nest on the cliff face. It is done in this fashion. A sling is placed around the waist of the descending man, and all the fellows strain to lower him down the cliff. Meanwhile, this same man grips for support onto the second rope which dangles on the cliff face. Further, the descending man carries a stout staff of oaken wood fitted at one end with a leather thong or strap about his wrists. This staff he employs for a prod to push himself hither and yon as he moves down the rocky surface. Footnote 1. As Bulwif went down, becoming ever smaller to my eyes, I saw that he maneuvered with the sling, the rope, and the stick very agilely, but I was not deceived into thinking this stone trivial matter, for I saw it to be difficult and requiring practice. Footnote. In the Faroe Islands of Denmark, a similar method of scaling cliffs is still practiced to gather bird eggs, an important source of food to the islanders. Return to text. Page 240. At length he safely reached the bottom and stood on the narrow ledge with the surf crashing over him. In truth, he was so diminished we could hardly see him wave his hand and signal that he was safe. Now the sling was hauled up, and also with it the oaken staff. Herger turned to me, speaking, "You shall go next." I said that I was feeling poorly. Also, I said I wished to see another man descend, in order better to study the manner of the descent. Herger said, "It is more difficult with each descent, because there are fewer here above to lower a man down. The last man must descend without the sling at all, and that shall be Esko, for his arms are iron. It is a mark of our favor which allows you to be the second man to descend. Go now." I saw in his eyes that there was no hope of delay, and so I was myself fitted into the sling, and I gripped the stout staff in my hands, which were slippery with sweat, and my whole body likewise was slippery with sweat, and I shivered in the wind as I went over the side of the cliff, and for the last time saw the five Northmen straining at the rope, and then they were lost from view. I made my descent.